Second Chronicles 23. You've got the account here of how Jehoiada, the high priest, makes Joash the king when he's only 7 years old. And they kill Athaliah, who effectively was the evil queen of the land. Now let's just back up a bit. Athaliah was the daughter of Jezebel, who was herself not a Hebrew. She was from Sidon. And as you know, Jezebel absolutely hated Yahweh. She hated anything to do with Yahweh. She wanted all the worship of Yahweh to be destroyed, and her daughter Athaliah was definitely a psycho case. And Athaliah's son, Ahaziah, was killed. And she got so furious at the end of chapter 22 that she destroyed all the royal seed of the house of Judah. If my son's not going to be the king because he's dead, then I'll kill anyone else who possibly can maybe be the king. But Jehoshabeath, which means devoted to Jehovah, and I suspect that wasn't her birth name, that's what she became known as, Jehoshabeath, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the king's sons who were slain, and put him and his nurse in the bedroom. Now, bedroom is the wrong translation. It is literally the room for the beds, and I think it refers to a storeroom. And we are told that he grew up hidden in the temple. So I think that the temple of Yahweh was not in use, and there was a storeroom there in this derelict, unused building, because they weren't worshipping Yahweh anymore. And in that storeroom, the chamber of the beds, where they kept the old beds that didn't work anymore or were broken or whatever, old beds and furniture, she arranged for Joash to be hidden. Now, of course, she was risking her life to do this. And Jehoiada, her husband, was the priest, the high priest, although in 1 Chronicles 6, where you have the list of the high priests, you don't read of Jehoiada. And I think that's probably because he didn't actually practice as the high priest. So Athaliah reigned over the land. She was a strong worshipper of Baal. This is end of chapter 22. And in chapter 24 we read, the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken up God's house, so the temple was ruined. As I say, in that disused, ruined building, in a forgotten little storeroom, that was where Joash was kept hidden for 6 years. Now, this means that Jehoshabeath and Jehoiada were risking their lives to do this, and yet they worked underground to spread the knowledge and love of Yahweh, so that now in chapter 23, they have enough courage and enough support to do a kind of a putsch. And they suddenly announce Joash as the king, although he's only 7 years old, and they've got enough support from the priests and the guards to take Athaliah and kill her. Well, that putsch could have only worked if, in fact, they had been quietly building up support for Yahweh against Baal worship, against Athaliah. And of course, Athaliah is utterly shocked when it happens, and she screams out, "Treason, treason!" She can believe that right under her nose, this whole putsch has been planned. So, you come to the conclusion then that Jehoshabeah and Jehoiada, the priest, were absolutely underground believers. That's why, as I say, he's not listed as a practicing high priest in the list in 1 Chronicles 6. And so there arises this big theme of secret underground believers. When you start thinking about that theme, all sorts of people come to mind. You think of Jonathan in the court of Saul. Saul hated David. Jonathan was on David's side, but you know, you read those times when they meet outside and David returns to the bush and Jonathan returns to the city, to the court of Saul. Think of the time when Absalom makes his rebellion. It was Hushai who claimed on the surface level, showed himself supportive of Absalom, who says, "Yeah, I'll support whoever Yahweh wants to be king. I'll serve you as I served your father." It's him who actually saves David by overturning the counsel of Ahithophel. Think of Joseph and Nicodemus. These were underground believers. You think of Esther. She was very underground. Nobody even knew that she was Jewish. Mordecai told her not to tell anybody. And then when the decree is made by Haman to kill all the Jews, well, she takes a deep breath and basically says to the king, I'm a Jewess, you know, please don't do this. And so you could go on. You think of Joseph and Daniel, who were high up in pagan courts. I have no doubt that there must have been many times when their beliefs in Yahweh were pretty much compromised or they had to be quiet. You think of Naaman, who says to Elisha, well, when I go back to Syria, I go to the house of Rimmon with my master, and he leans on my arm as he worships Rimmon. Is that okay? And Elisha says, go in peace. The more you think about it, there were all sorts of secret underground believers. Now, you've got to be careful with this, because if you take it to its to too great a degree, you can end up saying, yeah, I can live the life of the world, do the things the world does, just that in my heart I'm a bit different and I actually do believe in God. And yet, on the other hand, this is a big enough theme in the Bible for us to see that God does accept this sort of underground believer syndrome and actually works through those people. I've given you a number of examples, and actually there are far more. And I think of all the fine brethren I know in the corporate world who lament to me that they feel they're underground believers, really, living in an environment, a high pressure, very secular environment, and they sort of feel a bit hypocritical. And I come out with all these examples and say, well, you know, maybe you have been put in that position for a time such as this or whatever. And you think of, as I say, Jehoiada and Jehoshabeath quietly spreading the faith of Yahweh amongst people who were totally, in a society anyway, that was totally opposed to Yahweh. But then against all that, you counter it with the Lord's statement that a city set on a hill cannot be hid. This whole thing has absolute currency in our world, where there are folks who get baptized who are living in very, very extremist, jihadist Islamic societies. And they come to the truth of Jesus and want to be baptized, and maybe baptize themselves or fly to a neutral country, get baptized there, and then return. And I always say to them, you know, I come out with these examples and I say, look, you know, keep it quiet. And yet, time and again, they've said to me, but a city set on a hill cannot be hid. You cannot keep quiet about this. And I've observed that despite me maybe in my faithlessness saying, well, you know, be wise, you know, no need to be a martyr, they do say something, and they do preach to people, because that is natural. If you've got good news, you cannot keep it to yourself, and they suffer because of it. And as you know, we do a lot of work trying to help those sort of folks when they have to run for their lives to other countries or whatever, seeking asylum and so forth. So I conclude, therefore, that although we can live and we have to live as underground believers, as it were, in the end, and it may take decades, but in the end, the Lord will make you come out, because a city set on a hill cannot be hid. But meantime, we ought to recognize this in our dealings with others who are believers and yet apparently are living in very compromised situations. And we are also to see it in ourselves that although at times, maybe in our weakness, maybe because God intends it, we have to be quiet, or we have to be quiet, but we are quiet about our faith. Yeah, but there will come a time when we shall come out. And it always worries me no end that when Jesus comes back, the folks that I have known and lived amongst will think, but Duncan, you were one of these people. You're one of these people who's got eternal life. Why didn't you tell me about it? It worries me no end. I live in a large apartment block with 48 apartments in it. And do those people, all of them, know that I'm a believer? Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. I just think he's the guy with glasses and the kids. I should tell them. I don't have to be an underground believer. Because how is it going to be when Jesus comes back? Oh, yeah, the guy and his family in flat number 9. Yeah, they are with this Jesus, and they're in Jerusalem now. They've got eternal life. And everyone's going to be like, well, why didn't you tell us about it, mate? You know? And this is a trouble with reasoning too far down this line of being an underground believer, that you can end up actually living a secular life and justifying yourself. But as I say, it's a difficult one and it's intentionally difficult. But my observation is with all these people that I've mentioned, Joseph and Nicodemus would be great examples, as would the people we're reading about here, Jehoiada and Jehoshabeath. There did come a time with all of them when they came out for the Lord. And the city set on a hill ultimately cannot be hid.